Welcome back to Split Decision. This week on episode 64, we're recapping UFC Vegas 98. Then we're going to predict UFC Vegas 99. Fun fact, the 99 in UFC Vegas is the number of fight card in that arena.
You want to hear another fun fact?
What?
The next one at the Apex is UFC Vegas 100.
I should have said it then, probably. Oh, well. Either way, from there, we're going to huddle up with some football. Hood. And move on. That's going to be NFL Week 7, College Football Week 8. Got that right this week.
Correct.
From there,
Correctamundo.
We're going to lay out all of our picks and bets for the week. We're digging back from that hole we dug early in the season. Slowly but surely, we're going to get there.
At least pick-wise.
But yeah, let's jump right into the episode. As always, let's go.
The 98th fight card in the Apex happened this weekend, Alex. UFC Vegas 98. We thought we might see a new rising title contender.
I put money on it.
We don't have that yet. He still might be there. That's Taiara.
We actually do, though, because Asu, what's the Japanese fellow who's fighting Pantoja for the belt now? Asukara, or yes. Whatever his name is. So we do still have a Japanese contender.
But before we get to the main event, before we get to the main card, Alex, take us back down a trip down memory lane.
Down.
And let's do the prelims.
Yeah, all right. Clay Carpenter opened up the prelims, this fight card, with a good win.
A workmanlike performance.
Yeah, it was a good win over Lucas Rojas. Carpenter earned 2 out of his 3 takedowns.
Yeah, he's Carpenter and yeah. He's a workman.
I was just moving forward. It was a good one, but I was just moving forward, letting it breathe.
Okay.
He earned 2 out of 3 takedowns and some slicing elbows, split Rocha wide open, which led to him giving up his back and Carpenter getting the rear naked choke. That moves Carpenter to 8-0 in his career, 2-0 in the UFC.
He's really building something out there.
And 2 rear naked chokes in the UFC. I do like the Carpenter jokes. I don't know why I didn't go with any of them. I must have figured you would go there. Dan Argueta lost to Cody Haddon in his UFC debut. Cody Haddon won this fight by unanimous decision.
Cody Haddon, recent UFC Contender Series, Dana White Contender Series alum.
Yep. Argueta shot 24 takedowns and only landed 4. He couldn't hang with the striking of Haddon. It was a good showing. Cody Haddon showed a lot of skill in his debut. It made me very excited about his future. 8-1 in his career.
I believe he said Dana White never has to worry about a boring fight with me.
Yeah, he said if Dana White has a boring fight for me, just cut me.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty bold statement.
I respect it.
Yep. Julia Pilastri came in on short notice and took the lopsided split decision victory over Corey McKenna. While a close fight on the cards, Pilastri had mounds of success in the octagon early. She gave up the final round, in my opinion, but won the first 2 handily. McKenna landed her only takedown in the 3rd round. Pilastri moves to a strong 1-1 in the UFC.
I believe this was the first of many split decisions on this card.
Yeah, we're not talking about those yet. Justin Jr., I always get those mixed up even if I'm looking at them.
Who even knows the difference?
Junior Taffa took on Sean Sharaf. They both emptied the gas tank early, and if round 1 would have lasted any longer, I think Sharaf would have stolen the TKO victory. Enter round 2, though, the exhausted big boys, fresh off the stool and nearly out of gas. Taffa landed the heavier shots Sharaf couldn't keep up with, and somehow Taffa wins this fight by TKO. It was a weird one. They ran out of gas early.
It was a weird one. I'm not surprised. I mean, it was just bound.
Dude,
whoever could lift their fist was going to knock the other one out.
The whole time during the 7-minute fight we had, the commentators were just talking about how Junior Taffa wants to move to light heavyweight. And it's like, bro, you're lasting a round and a half at 250 pounds. That's not,
Maybe being lighter would be better for him.
Maybe. Either way, good win by Junior Taffa. Either way, a win's a win.
It's a win.
Yep. And you need that. He's 6-3 in his career. Thimba Garimbo took Nico Price to school on this fight, scoring 7 out of 9 takedowns with nearly 2 full rounds of control.
His
Price
cool name
had
too.
No answers. wink, wink. If you know Thimba Garimbo's nickname. From there, he outstruck. You know, Garimbo won unanimous decision. It wasn't an easy win. No fight's an easy win, but it was a great win. Not from my perspective, because they put a whole lot of work in that I don't put in. Garimbo won unanimous decision. The fairest judging on the night, in my opinion, 30-27 on all three, unanimous decision. Pat Sabatini out-wrestled and out-maneuvered Jonathan Pierce, who I have to admit, and the commentators are talking about it, Jonathan Pierce has good grappling, but Pat Sabatini saw the lone mistake that was made and locked in the rear naked choke.
You got to be on your game at all times when you're grappling with somebody dangerous like Sabatini.
Yeah, Sabatini has 12 career submission victories, so
it's his favorite way to finish a fight.
That's how he's trying to get there, low damage and take you out. Ramazan Tamirov took the prelims by storm in his UFC debut against CJ Vergara. Tamirov had the speed, power, and honestly every other advantage in the cage over Vergara, knocking him out 2 minutes and 50 seconds into the first round. 5 straight KOs from Tamirov on a 10-fight win streak entering his UFC
debut.
This
might have been the most electrifying performance of the whole card.
I agree. Let's jump right into the main card. Daniel Rodriguez versus Alex the Great Bright, Great White Morono.
This was one of the split decisions we mentioned earlier, I think. Yep. One of 3 split decisions on the main card alone.
So, of those split decisions, not of those, but of the split decisions of the night, Sal D'Amato was on 3 of them. The one that favored,
like the dissenting voice?
Yeah, this one, Tatsuro Taira, and Corey McKenna.
But this one is the one I think was probably one of the closer ones. I think there's an argument Moreno won this fight. I've had Daniel Rodriguez winning close, but there's an argument Moreno won this fight. I could see that.
This is one where I agree there could be. But the other two, Pallastri didn't lose that fight at all. And Brandon Royval didn't lose that fight.
Yeah, I think it was pretty clear he won 3 rounds to 2, in my opinion.
And for what they are, it's not the worst split decisions I've ever seen, but it's weird that they all voted, you know, Sal D'Amato voted for Morono, Taira, and McKenna.
And he's on, like,
a lot of fight
cards.
He's
a judge on a lot of fight cards.
Yeah, so suspect, at least. Either way, Daniel Rodriguez defeated Alex Morono by split decision. It was a good fight. A lot of striking. Close in a total output. Daniel Rodriguez had the edge in landed strikes.
Daniel Rodriguez is landing that jab like crazy.
Yeah. He I don't
want
to say
strong jab.
It wasn't for points. He was trying to open things up, and he did what he needed to do. He landed his sole takedown, which obviously is going to help you win.
And then was this the fight where Moreno dropped him like right away? Or was that the
Jung Young Park got dropped right away. And I was actually going to the fridge to get a beer for that fight, and I walked back. I was like, oh, are you fucking kidding me? No, Daniel Rodriguez, this was just a good back-and-forth fight. I thought D-Rod won.
Yeah, I had him slight winner as well.
It aggravated me in the moment, but once it breathes a little, I do see how Morono could have won, especially watching it back. Let's move on to the next fight, lightweights. Grant Dawson versus Rafa Garcia.
The only finish of the main card, correct?
Yes, only finish of the main card.
Only finish of the main card with Dawson with the second round TKO of Garcia. Dawson, this was a good fight for him.
Dude leveled up his striking, huh?
He did.
That was ridiculous.
He's a young guy that, remember, he had his loss, I believe, to Bobby Green when he was undefeated.
Yeah, 36-second KO. I mean, we talked about it last week, not like a fluke, but it's one of those where you just got caught.
So and he came back his last fight. This was the second fight since then, correct?
Dude, yeah.
Came back his last fight, won
by decision.
And in this fight, he, as you said, he leveled up.
Dude, I don't know what it was. He came out and he wanted to show something off. He had elbows. He had jabs. He had, I mean, everything. And not to all of that to mention that his wife has an absolute dump truck you could bounce a quarter off of.
Good for him.
His wife fight, I think he said his wife fights in December. After that, he might put a baby in her. I mean, Grant Dawson, KGD has the world looking up for him. The only thing I need to actually ask you about Grant Dawson is who's next? Is he ready for a top 15 shot? I think he might at this time.
I think he's close.
Slow rolling him.
He's close to a top 15. As you said, he fought Bobby Green. I don't know if Bobby Green was ranked when he fought him.
No, he wasn't. 15. He was like 17th. It doesn't really matter if you're not in the top 15. Let me give you my 3 options, because I think he's ready for a top 15 fight. my reach play.
Let me guess. Jalen Turner.
I made sure not to do it because he's booked. reach play will be a rematch of Bobby Green. When you get caught like that.
Yeah, I would like to see that.
I think it's a reach, but I think it could happen, especially with the trajectory difference that they're on, especially since those two fights. Well, KGD's trajectory never was messed up, but Bobby Green's has gone down. Or what about Benoit Saint-Denis taking two losses in a row?
I think that'd be a good fight for
Benoit. He's 11th or 12th in the ranking, so it would be a bit of a reach for Dawson, but I believe 13, 14, and 15 are all currently scheduled fights. Actually, 15 is Rafael Dos Anjos, and he requested to be removed from the rankings. So there's actually a 15 vacancy right now. My dogs are fighting. You hear that?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, well, they do that over dinner sometimes. Or what about the last beaten, Rafael Fiziev?
I think Benoit Saint-Denis is the one I want to see. I think it'd be a good fight for both. A nice step up in competition for Dawson. Chance for Benoit to get his
W back. It's one of those, like, wrestling could be a stalemate, so it could resort to a striking bout. And with Dawson's level up in striking,
I would love to see that.
Especially fight. With a little bit more time, he could learn another technique or master something else.
I think that could be a...
It would be a fun fight.
It could either be a fight night main event. It could be the main prelim or one of the top prelims of a pay-per-view card.
It could be any number fight on a numbered card for sure.
Yeah.
Let's go on to the fight we didn't get to talk about because it was a last-minute addition to the main card, but we did do our picks. We both got it right. Chidi Jokwani versus Jared Gooden.
I believe Gooden was one of three fighters on this card to miss weight.
Yeah, I believe he missed it by 2.5 pounds, which is not a crazy weight miss, but it's the welterweight division. It's like one of the easiest weight classes to make weight in.
Well, it just depends how big you are.
Well, move up. Womp womp, right? Yeah. Chidi Jokwani didn't care about the weight miss. He won 30-27 on all the judges' scorecards. And I think I take it back. This is the most honest judging scorecard of the night. This was the best judged one, but I think it's because it was the most clear.
Yeah, it was very clear that Chidi got the dub.
Chidi
was
better than
Gooden on the night. I want to say Gordon, but Gooden.
Jared Gooden. That's another fighter. Yeah.
Jared Gooden.
Yeah, you're right. Gooden had some success. You know, he got two takedowns when he shot eight. He did try to lock in a sub. But Jokwani overall just, you know, had every answer for the technique and everything. I don't have a who's next here, but the reason is because Chidi is 2-0 in the welterweight division, so it's a recent move for him. He wants a top 15 opponent. But if you look at the welterweight division, 14 of the top 25 welterweights have a fight booked.
Yeah. So it's a busy division.
It's becoming the busiest division quickly.
It's a good thing.
Yeah. And 4 through 10, 7 of those, you know, 4 fighters and 4 through 10 don't have a fight booked, but he's not getting
one of those. He's not a top 10 fight right now.
So I think he's just going to have to wait, you know, kind of maybe have to take one that's not in the top 15 to show off his skill set again or something.
Yeah, I still think he's a couple fights away from getting a ranked opponent.
But either way, I think Chidi is on the rise. Good showing by him over Jared Gooden, especially when Jared Gooden had the benefit of not having to cut the full amount of weight. Moving on, co-main event. Jung Young Park defeated Brad Tavares.
This was the fight. Jung Young Park got dropped right away.
And I was terrified. Like I said a few fights ago, I was in the garage here getting a beer, walked back in, and Tavares was on top of him. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, this is happening to Park again?
Park, he ended up getting the split decision win. This was a very close fight. Tavares, I mean, we talked about it, his leg kicks. He was going heavy on the leg kicks.
I have to say, Park countered the leg kicks with leg kicks of his own.
Yes, Park started
I see your leg kicks,
I'll leg kick you back.
Park landed 19, Tavares landed 8, and there was more damage on Tavares' leg early, which pretty much made the leg kick stop after the first half of the fight.
It was a good rebound from Park. After getting, as you said, he got dropped right away, and it's like, oh no, here we go again.
Park's last fight was, a robbery split decision, you know, where he lost. It's like, this dude needs to catch a break, and the judges are not handing out breaks lately. You got to win sometimes not by decision. I mean, it is what it is. Park striking is good. His wrestling is good. 2 out of 6 takedowns over a round of control.
I agree. It was a good performance from Park. It was a good fight.
Middleweight's a weird division.
Tavares came out and fought well, but Park, he's got to get some finishes to be able to really level up.
Yep. I got some questions for Park. Because he's 8-3 in the UFC, he usually puts like a 2 or 3 fight win streak together before he takes a loss, which even when he takes a loss, it's still adding, you know, he has stock rise almost every time.
One of them was a very close split decision loss.
Right.
His last loss.
So he's not just getting completely walked over. I got three options for you for Jung Young Park, the Iron Turtle. What about Paulo Costa? He's 1-4 in his last 5, admittedly against top contention in the division.
I think that's a good one, though. I think it kind of goes with the Benoit Saint-Denis thing where it's like,
you got to answer.
He's a guy, he needs a dub, and this is a guy that's rising, so it's like, why not put him together?
Yeah, he's holding a ranking that I don't want to say he's not deserving of, but
Prove you're deserving of
right.
it against a rising guy.
Or Ikram Aliskarov. Just got knocked out by Bobby Knuckles.
Which they kind of threw him in there.
Right.
He jumped in the deep end real quick.
Which, good for him. He took his test.
Yeah, good for him.
Or the good UFC for him for getting knocked out. The old gatekeeper himself, Jack Hermanson. Probably my reach play of all of them.
Hermanson, was his last fight against Joe Pyfer? Oh, no, he's fought since then.
He's fought once since then. He won, though, I believe.
Yeah, so he's kind of been silently on the rise, but you're right. He's kind of been in that top 10 for a while.
Yeah.
Give me Paulo Costa. That's the one I think that's the most exciting. That'll get most people talking. I think that'll be a good fight.
And it'll answer my question. Is Paulo Costa washed? Is he done?
I mean, when he fought Bobby Knuckles, he was right there.
Maybe. Yeah, he was. All right, let's go to the main event. Brandon Royval, split decision win over Tatsuro Tyra. Shout out Saul D'Amato again. Gave Tyra the split decision nod. Gave him rounds 1, 2, and 3, I believe.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. Royval, I would not give him round 1 at all.
I think Royval got the deserving win on this. Yeah. Tyra, though, it wasn't a bad performance. He faced a lot of adversity. He proved he's about it. He's a tough chin. He's a tough guy. Not getting knocked out, and I think going into the fifth round, it was 2-2, because I think first round, you give to Royval, Tyra rebounded well, I think he won the second.
Either fighter.
Royval came back, won the third, then Tyra responded again to adversity, won the second, then Royval, I think, you know, just being the vet, and he had the better striking.
He also had the better gas tank.
He had the better striking, he had the better gas tank. By the end,
he won the fifth round, in my opinion. I rooted for Tyra, had money on Tyra. I think you as well. We both picked Tyra.
Yeah, I think it was 1-3-5 for Royval.
Exactly. And that's how you win a fight. That's why he's the number one contender for the belt. I guess he's got to wait his turn now. But the only who's next I got for him is who's going to win between Pantoja or Asakura.
Pantoja loses, Royval's right there to possibly get a title shot.
And the only question is why wouldn't Royval get another title shot? He beat, you know, it might have just been a bad
thing.
Well,
I think the UFC now is just trying to not avoid having these trilogies at this weight class.
The trilogies at flyweight, the quadrilogies at flyweight are oft.
But, I mean, at some point it'll be undeniable.
It has to happen if it has to happen.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't contend with the top 5 and they keep beating you, you don't deserve to be there. That just is what it is.
Yeah, this fight reminded me a lot of, I know it didn't end nearly the same. It wasn't as decisive as like Poirier beating Benoit Saint-Denis, but it was kind of the same thing. It was like a guy that's been in that top 5 for a long time.
Yeah.
The new contender everybody's talking about, has just a lot of hope, comes in and just gets, obviously Tyra didn't get stopped as in he got knocked out, but he got stopped as in like, it's pretty obvious Royval won the fight, and Royval was better.
Well, it was almost the same thing as the Pantoja-Urseg fight, because Urseg put up a better fight against Pantoja than he did against Cara France.
Yeah.
So, either way, shout out to Brandon Royval. I think he gets the winner of Asakura versus Pantoja.
And I think Tyra, he's still... Royval,
24.
Said this,
he's still only 24.
24, it's his first loss. He's still tough. I think he's still right there in the top 5 of this division, I think. And he'll be back at a title shot.
You know,
title contention soon enough.
At the end of that fight, you know what I wanted to hear more than anything, though? I'm so happy. Thank you.
Okay, we move on from recapping UFC Vegas 98 to now previewing UFC Vegas 99 5-card main event. Until something gets fucked up or somebody misses weight or
they just add one randomly or swap it around on us. Either way, we're going to talk about these 5 and hope and pray that these 5 fights actually go.
Yes. And Let's kick it off, Alex. The first fight of the main card to open it up. Darren Elkins, the Damage, taking on Daniel Pineda, the Pit. Both Americans. One's 39, one's 40, so both old guys.
All right, check the box. Age discrepancy does not matter. Nor reach discrepancy here. 2 inches, in my opinion, is not enough to give a shit.
Elkins comes in 18-10 in the UFC, 28-11 overall. He's been in the UFC quite a while, actually coming off of a nice submission win. He's alternated wins and losses in his last five fights.
Yep.
Pineda, 5 wins, 7 losses, 1 no contest in the UFC, so hasn't had the most success. And he's coming off of 2 straight losses. But one interesting thing about Pineda, he is, as I said, 5 career UFC wins, 28 career total wins.
Yeah, it's
all
a lot.
Of them by finishes.
19,
he's never won by scorecard.
19 subs, 9 KOs. It's a lot.
So he's a guy, he's either going to finish you or
lose by decision.
Yeah, you're going to
beat
much.
Him. Yeah. Pineda is 1-3-1 in his last 5. Abysmal recent record. But compared to Elkins, at least the people Elkins has fought recently, Pineda was facing tougher competition, at least in his defense. That's the only thing I got for that. Reach is close on these two, like we were saying. Age is close. Everything about these two guys, their style, everything about them is pretty close. It's a similar stylistic matchup.
This is almost like the UFC's like, ah, these guys are close enough.
Right. Pineda, like you said, 100% finishing rate, but to add it up to make it, you know, sound even crazier, he's had 47 pro fights and still has 100% finishing rate. It's just ridiculous. It's pretty much a toss-up on the scorecards. I think it updated. It actually is even now. It says it on the screen. I got to lean with Daniel Pineda because even though he's 1-3, he faced tougher competition. While Elkins has alternated wins and losses, leaning on that kind of sets him up for a loss, in my opinion, if, you know, he's a man of averages. So, yeah, I'm going to pick Daniel Pineda. What you got, Holmes?
I'm going to go with Elkins. I'm going to go with a guy that's had much more success in the UFC. He has 18 career UFC wins, so he's been in – he knows what it takes to win in the UFC consistently.
But adding the consistently right there because – that's the one advantage he does have.
This is kind of, but as you said, this is really a toss-up fight between two guys, most likely out of their primes, but I'm going to go with Elkins with the win.
Cool. Bantamweight division next up. Brady Highstand taking on Jake Hadley. You got Bam Bam taking on White Kong.
Yeah, White Kong is kind of...
just a random... it seems like a random-ass nickname.
I just want to ask him, what are you implying about King Kong?
So the only thing I could think of was it's like a niche video game from like the 80s called Rampage, and it was like a white King Kong ape thing.
I think he's a white guy, and he wants to say he's...
but that's the only like white Kong I could ever think of.
Anyway.
We digress. Highstand is 3-1 after losing his UFC debut. Yeah,
3 straight wins. A nice
sub win over Garrett Armfield is his most recent win. Hadley, 3-2 in his last 5. He beat Cowlin Lufferin after his 2-fight loss skid. But those were both decision losses, so it, you know.
So both guys coming off wins.
Doesn't necessarily mean that he lost those fights. Could just be bad judging. I think he did lose both of those fights, though.
He's kind of been up and down, Hadley, in his UFC career. 3-3 record.
Yeah.
Seems like he can't really get a solid footing, while Highstand has been, as you said, lost his first one in the UFC, and he's won 3 straight, so he's really seen the success come out.
Yep.
And only 25 years old for Bam Bam.
Yeah, he doesn't have quite the striking acumen that Hadley does. Like, he doesn't strike as often, he doesn't land as often, but I can guarantee you this, he's going to shoot takedowns. Brady Highstand, I don't want to guarantee he gets the takedown, because there's been, you know, he's only had 4 fights in the UFC, he's still young. Hadley has less than perfect defense. You know, he's been taken down in several of his UFC fights. It's weird. This is another toss-up. Most of this card is a toss-up.
One interesting Hadley, though, has never been finished. Just 3 career losses, which all in the UFC, all 3 by decision.
You're right. 11-3 for Hadley, 9-2 for Highstand. I got to lean Brady Highstand. I think he's on a bit of a career trajectory rise right now, and I think with that prolific takedown offense that he's throwing out with decent striking game. I mean, while he subbed Garrett Armfield was supposed to have the striking advantage in that fight, and it looked actually like Brady Highstand had the striking advantage. So I lean with Brady Highstand holding his own against Hadley's you know, good striking, but grabbing that takedown and getting the win.
I'm going to go with High Stand, too. I think he's had much more success. I think he's going to get his fourth straight win. I think it's probably going to be by decision, considering Hadley, you know, he's not a guy that gets finished ever.
That's probably what I would lean as well.
But I'm going High Stand. I think he continues his momentum, gets his fourth straight win.
Good. Charles Energy Johnson taking on Sue Madurji. All one word.
Yeah.
This is going to be a fun fight.
The Tibetan Eagle.
This is the crazy one where these two guys are flyweights, 125 pounds, or 5'9", 5'8". Pretty close
in
reach.
Same exact career record, 16-6, both of them.
Pretty different with how they've gone down. Charles Johnson has a good mix, 7 KOs, 3 subs, 6 decisions. Sue Madurji has 13 KOs, 1 sub. I have to think that he knocked that dude down.
Six times. Yeah, he knocked him down and just...
They didn't stop the fight, so he's like, all right, I guess rear naked choke.
One interesting thing, his 6 losses, Sue Madurji, all 6 by submission, so there's a clear game plan to beat him. And he's taking on Charles Johnson, who has 4 career sub wins. None in the UFC, but you never know. So the Tibetan Eagle, 3-3 in the UFC, so he's been up and down, but Charles Johnson hasn't been that much better, 5-4.
But recently...
3 straight wins.
I was about to say, recently Charles Johnson, 3 straight wins.
So maybe he's
recently Sue Madurji, 2-fight loss streak.
Is it two guys going in different directions? Is it going to even out?
I feel like Charles Johnson got a good camp, couple good camps behind him.
And he's got some momentum.
He's really building off of that. I think he feels good. He's fighting good. And I think he's going to keep riding that lightning. He's on the favorite, you know, on the favorite side of the odds. It's a little bit bigger than anyone we've talked about, minus 200, minus 220, whatever it is. But he still has ability on the ground. If you look at his, you know, fights, what'd you say he was total in the UFC?
Johnson is 5-4, but so 3 straight wins.
9 total fights. He's shooting a takedown 20% of the time, or he's landing takedowns 20% of the time. He's landing 1 out of every 3 per 15 minutes.
And you're taking on a guy who that's probably going to be your clear game plan. So
yeah, even if you want to do damage from the ground, I think if you're Charles Johnson, which I'm picking for this fight, I think you take him down and do damage if you don't want to sub him.
I agree. I think I'm picking Johnson. I just think between two guys who you look at their stats, a lot of them are pretty even in terms of wins, losses, and everything. Sue Madurji has a clear weakness that Charles Johnson does not have.
So in that,
I'm going with Charles Johnson.
Yeah, I got to agree. I say yes. Go with Charles. Everybody, go with Charles
Johnson.
Go with
Charles Johnson. Let's go. Main
2 fights.
Fight before the main event. I was trying to see how I could work this.
Co-main event on the bantamweight division.
Robert Font.
There you go.
Taking on Kyler Phillips. Font, 10-7 in the UFC, 28 overall. Phillips, 12-2, 6-1 in the UFC. Rob Font has lost 4 out of 5, but listen to the 4 guys he's lost to. Davison Figueroa in his last fight,
yeah.
Corey Sanhagen, Marlon Chito Vera, Jose Aldo.
That was what I was going to say if you didn't, that even though he's lost 4 out of 5, the losses are good losses. I get he's old,
and
probably
he's
out of his prime.
He's a guy that you're not going to – I mean, he's had 1 career loss by a finish, a submission loss. But like, you're not going to knock this guy out. He's going to be there the whole time.
Yeah. He's got
very
one
tough
win.
Guy.
I'd say was the surprise win over Adrian Yanez.
Yeah, the rising Adrian Yanez.
Yeah.
Everybody thought he was going to be a stepping stone, and he just finished Adrian Yanez.
Yeah,
and kind of derailed his career.
This is kind of the same thing though. Kyler Phillips is a heavy favorite, -425, biggest favorite on the night so far, or I think total. Yeah, total.
Total, yes.
Phillips is on the alternate side, 4-1 in his last 5.
He's
won
3 straight.
3 decision wins.
1-3 straight, and he's 6-1 in the UFC, so he's won 6 out of 7.
And he faced a recent big test over Pedro Munhoz, who was recently in the top 15 in the bantamweight division. That was Kyler Fight's, you know, largest test thus far, and he's going to keep facing them as on his
that
rise.
That was the biggest step up in competition,
right.
I think Rob Font's right above that, right?
Yeah.
Right at that level, too, so it's going to be another tough one for him. We're going to how legit Kyler Phillips he is and how good his 6-1 record. Is it really a 6-1 record?
I think
it is.
I was going to say I think it is, and I don't even want to say that age is going to play a factor, but this is one of those ones that you can bet with the age being
29 versus 37.
Right,
Phillips
8-year age gap, similar reach. They're fighting off the both stance, which means they're going to switch the same type of way. You kick them, it's going to hurt. Southpaw. Their takedown, you got Kyler Phillips leading that side. I think Kyler Phillips is going to win, -400. I think a lot of the favorites are going to be winning tonight. Even though there's a toss-up, the lean is going to win a lot of the times on this fight card tonight. What do you have?
I agree with you. I got Phillips winning. I really like Rob Font, but I think these are two careers going in different directions.
How small Davis and Figueiredo is, having the success he did being able to take Rob Font down, I think opened the door for people to see that it's possible like that.
Yeah, I think Kyler Phillips continues his rise. He's going to move to 7-1 in the UFC, and he's going to present himself as a legit contender in the division.
I like it. Let's go to the middleweight division for the – what? How did you say it before? The main fight? The final fight? The last fight of the night?
The last fight of the main card.
There you go. The middleweight division, Anthony Fluffy Hernandez taking on Michel Demoledor Pereira.
Pereira,
that's one word you don't need a translation for. You know, yeah. That means demolisher.
Pereira, he's all. I
should have mistranslated it just terribly.
I couldn't believe Pereira, Michel Pereira, is only 31 years old.
Yeah, he looks 45.
He has more.
Fights like he's 22.
And he has more career wins than he is old. He's 37 career, not UFC, but wins. There 31 you go. Years old, 9-2 in the UFC. As I say, I've been saying it every week now. When we're looking at all these fights, you see everybody's record in the UFC. When you're 9-2, yeah. And you're something along that record in the UFC, that's you're legit.
Yeah, he was in the welterweight division for a little bit, missed weight a couple times, and he's like, all right, I need to come find my power in the middleweight division. And power he found.
8 straight wins now for him, 3 of them finishes, 2 straight submission wins. I mean, but Pereira is on a run right now.
But don't count out Anthony Hernandez. He's on a 5-fight win streak with 4 out of those 5 fights being finishes.
Yeah,
like,
so
he's been... The Fluffy nickname is all a joke for him. He's got hands of steel.
Yeah, he's 6-2 in the UFC, as you said. Out of those 6 wins, 5 of them are finishes. One KO, 4 subs.
Yeah, I mean, these are both guys. Sub, but he hits hard, man.
These are both guys. Momentum is on their side. Both guys rising. Both guys are trying to prove a point, trying to break into this title conversation. I think there's not a lot of people talking about this fight. I think just because it's before, you know, a numbered UFC card. Right. But this is a huge main event. It's going to be a very entertaining fight.
I absolutely agree.
Both guys are very fun to watch, very active on the feet. And
Hernandez, he has a great ground game, right?
Like great ground game.
You know that. He's got 8 sub-career wins. You know, like, while I say he has hands of steel, he only has 2 career knockouts, but he's doing a lot of damage to people from the top. Making him flip over to their back, getting subs. He's doing damage. He's striking hard. His accuracy is good. He lands 6.62 takedowns per match.
I mean, that's just insane.
But you look at the Demoledor, Michel Pereira's stats, 94% takedown defense. And that's through how many fights in the UFC? 9?
Through 11.
11?
UFC fights.
So 94% through 7. It's hard to take this man down. He is strong. You're going to have to walk through hell to hit, to take
one thing
Michel
about
Pereira down.
Pereira is, he has a great ground game too. Mm-hmm. Great submissions. But I think he's a little bit more heavy-handed than Anthony Hernandez. He has more the knockout power and the power to stun you.
Yep.
And that's why I'm going to go with Pereira. I think he's a little bit more complete of a fighter.
I
think he's a little more well-rounded. Anthony Hernandez, his 2 UFC losses, 1 by KO, 1 by submission.
Yep.
So it's there. And I think Pereira is going to figure out a way to finish him.
Yep, I agree. I think Michel Pereira is going to win this fight. I think I agree with everything you said. He's a more well-rounded fighter. He has a great ground game, but better striking. So, you know, when you zig, he zags type of deal.
And he's a guy, he's some
fast.
Crazy zags, dude.
Yeah, he's fast.
You don't know
cardio.
What he's unpredictable.
He'll do a backflip to try to kick you in the head. Like,
yeah.
He'll jump off the cage and roundhouse kick you. We've seen him do some crazy shit.
He's probably the most unpredictable fighter in the UFC in terms of what kind of movement he's going to have.
Yep. So I'm, like you said as well, I'm very excited for this main event. Check it out. Anthony Hernandez versus Michel Pereira. So we're back with Stakes and Takes. Let's do a college football recap, then a quick NFL recap, and then we'll jump in, give our predictions on some college football. What is it, week 8?
I believe so.
NFL week 7. Let's jump right in. Last week, we had Texas. We both had Texas beating Oklahoma.
And boy, did they beat Oklahoma.
But we both thought Oklahoma was going to be a good rival. We thought the Red River rivalry was going to hold strong. It was going to be a close game.
You also gave the fake news that Quinn Ewers was not starting.
Yeah.
And that happened. Literally, I went home and it was like, Quinn Ewers is starting.
Yeah, it was a last-minute decision. So,
last-minute decision on Tuesday.
I am Donald Trump's worst nightmare now. Fake news. Moving on. We won that game, though. Texas.
Yeah, Texas 34-3.
Texas dubs for us.
This dominated OU. OU had no answer. They couldn't do anything on offense.
The Nittany Lions took down the Trojans in overtime.
We got lucky on this one. USC was dominating. Dude. I think they were up 20-3 or 20-6 at halftime.
Yeah, it was.
They were like dancing on the sideline and shit. And Penn State stormed back. Did you see it? The Penn State?
Yes, I saw it.
Tied in 17 catches for like 240 yards.
You can see my
nails.
They look terrible. I've been chewing them up all weekend over all these games I had to watch. They were all close, tough games to watch.
Except for Texas. That was every game was close. Penn State somehow pulled it out of their ass. So overtime win at USC.
Fun fact, Texas was the only game of the four, or of the five for college football that we picked that the favorite line covered the spread. So
I believe it.
Fun fact for you. Penn State missed the spread. They won in overtime by three. Good game. Nail biter, impressive. Ohio State lost to Oregon by three, I believe, right? Or by one?
By one. Ohio State, they boneheaded decision.
Yeah.
It would have been a very long field goal. They probably wouldn't have made it, but you know, you got to give your kicker a chance. Quarterback slid with 0 seconds left, thought he had time. Oregon wins. Oregon, a huge win at home. Big Ten.
You know what makes me happy, though? The guy on Twitter or X, Ohio's Tate.
Yes.
He had to eat like 30 peeps because that was his. He made a thing for every game for Ohio's season, and he lost, so he had to eat like a whole bunch of peeps. But made me feel good.
Big win for Oregon, probably.
Big loss for us.
Probably the win. Well, I would say it's right up there with Alabama's win over Georgia's, like the most impressive win. And Alabama went and screwed the pooch the week after, so. Look out for Oregon this week.
Yep. Number 9, Ole Miss. I had Ole Miss.
Loses to the Tigers.
Yeah.
Tigers pulled out of their ass. Ole Miss had plenty of chances to put this game away. They couldn't. So, LSU hung in there. Defense finally showed out. Nussmeier, after struggled a lot of the game, but when it counted, came up clutch, won in overtime. Ole Miss sucks.
There's your time.
Ole Miss has not won in Tiger Stadium since 2008. Go Tigers. Fuck Ole Miss.
Fair. I lost the pick.
I got it right.
Good job. Kansas State at Colorado.
I got this one wrong. Colorado, I thought.
Well, they almost did.
They had like 3 minutes left. They took the lead.
Yeah. It was another good game.
I think what Colorado's proven, they lost this game. Kansas State won. Congrats, Kansas State. But Colorado's proven they are better than they were last year. They can compete.
What Deion's son is on defense?
Shiloh, yeah, he talks shit on his son. Which,
if Shiloh would have played better, they probably would have won.
Yeah.
Like, don't miss that open field tackle. Get juked out of your knees. Yeah.
And your dad calls you out.
But, like, I respect him.
No, I respect it, too.
Right.
Like,
he goes back to the Deion ways. It's tough love. He's going to get better. Those are obvious things where you just, you know, you can't do, but you did it, so you just got to learn from it. I got it right. KSU won. They missed the spread by four. Colorado lost. Close win for me.
Mad about that one.
No, exactly. Moving on.
Now we go to NFL.
So my turn to talk.
We both went 3-2.
My turn to talk. No, I went 5-0 NFL. I didn't miss an NFL pick.
Oh, no, I was talking about college
football. Oh, college football. Yeah, college football 3-2. NFL, my turn to talk. Buccaneers at Saints. Bucks won. They covered the spread. Got the under.
You beat a rookie quarterback who was like a seventh-round pick.
Yeah, we beat up on an injured team. I just warned you not to pick with your heart.
We. Well, it looked like for a while the Saints were going to somehow pull it off. After going down 17-0, they stormed back with 20 straight points.
Dude, I had a
close for a while, and then in the fourth, they fell apart. The Bucs just.
I had a seven.
Baker Mayfield almost had the Baker Mayfield game where it's like, he's going to fuck this up.
Right. I had a 7-leg parlay. Every leg hit, but Mike Evans, I needed him to score 40 yards. He got 38. And he got 38 in like the first half.
And
so,
then he went to the locker room.
Yeah, he just chilled. He's like, I had to poo. So, Bucs won, Saints lost. probably one of the last times we'll be talking about the Saints this season, because as it goes further, we'll be talking more and more about the better teams, or the teams we think are going to be ending up in the playoffs.
Speaking of better teams, the Ravens, we both got this one right, beat the Commanders 30-23, but it was a solid performance from Jaden Daniels and the Commanders.
Yeah, dude, a rookie performance, putting up numbers like he is, putting up performances like he is, facing teams like the Ravens and holding his own for as long as the team can.
It was almost a win-win, because the Ravens look good, got the win. Commanders look good.
Better than the Cowboys.
They're promising. But yeah, I think the Ravens are legit.
That divisional game, actually.
What's that?
Commanders-Cowboys would be...
I hope the Commanders score 70 points.
My dad's a Cowboys fan. He was over here yesterday. He's pretty much done. He was like, I don't know why they paid Dak $200 million or whatever. That's the stupidest
shit. Yeah, let's just move on to that game. 47-9 Lions. Whoop that ass. They were...
But we got it right, so let's be happier than we were.
The Lions were like making up plays, throwing to linemen in the game.
Yeah, just doing whatever.
It was crazy. Jerry Jones went on radio today and freaked out. He threatened to fire the radio host.
I saw a video where CeeDee Lamb was like cleaning out Dak's locker. I think it was fake or like a joke, but either way,
yeah,
it was funny as hell.
Most likely fake. I don't think he was doing it.
But it was a good one for the Lions. Asserted their dominance over the Thanksgiving. You know, that's the most watched Thanksgiving team now, because I don't give a shit about the Cowboys.
The Cowboys
this year on Thanksgiving.
0-3 at home.
That's
crazy.
But admittedly, though, they're always pretty bad at home, right?
Not this bad. This is the first time they're 0-3.
Yeah, they are never this bad. Let's go to the next game. Second to last game, Bengals at Giants.
Bengals, thank God. Bengals got the win.
Everybody
Joe
loves
Burrow
with a 50-yard
run.
But that was it. He threw 5 touchdown passes against the Ravens and then can only do...
Well, I mean, the Giants' defense showed up. It wasn't Burrow. Like, they were fumbling. They were...
No, I get it. I'm just saying.
The Bengals
like,
are just a mess. They figured out a way to get this win, but they got to get this straightened out.
It's frustrating is all I'm really
it
talking
is. The Giants could not do anything, though, offensively.
Yeah. Bengals still have pretty much no hope for the season. This season.
2-4, they got a chance. They're only a game... If you look at the playoff standings, they're only a game back wins. It's too early. They got
Bills time. At Jets to wrap it up.
Bills at Jets. Bills got the win. It
Dude,
wasn't a pretty game, but they figured out a way to get
penalized,
win.
Right?
Yeah, the Jets. Like,
that was
questionable
just,
calls against the Jets, but
I mean, both teams. Either way, like it was just like call after call. It was like these refs.
I mean, these were both teams that needed to win. Bills, I think, had 2 straight losses coming
in.
Jets had 2 straight losses.
In one of our fantasy group football chats, this guy named Dwayne said that the refs were going to have to ice their arms after the game.
Yeah, it was one of those where it's like. This is just getting ridiculous. Let him hold.
If it's this bad. Salah got fired. They had the defensive coordinator calling plays. He's interim head coach.
Yeah, he's
he did a fine job. You know, they got the second half Hail Mary, 4th time in Aaron Rodgers' career. That's pretty cool.
Nuts. They almost pulled it out.
But they did it. Bills win,
but
and
the
we
loss
get it right.
And then they get Davante Adams the next day, so watch out for the Jets.
Yeah, they get Davante Adams. So I went 5-0 on NFL. Would you
4-1.
4-1. All right, so that'll move us to, drum roll, please, 11-4 both for the week.
Yes, 11-4.
So good job. I'm 68-38. You're 66-40. So
I hate you.
We're good. We're starting back to, you know, rebuild the trends as usual. Let's jump into this week, college football. Starting off the first matchup, what do we have?
Nebraska going to number 16, Indiana. Nebraska. Yep. 5-1, 2-1 in the Big Ten. Indiana 6-0 for the first time in like 50 years. 3-0 in the Big Ten.
Both teams coming out of a bye.
Indiana 6.5-point favorites at home, which is pretty significant. They're -230 on the money odds. Last game for Indiana, 41-24 over Northwestern. Last game, Nebraska 14-7 over Rutgers. I think both teams are pretty evenly matched, honestly.
Indiana, yeah, but just for different reasons.
This is their best season in a while. Nebraska, also their best season in a while. I just think Indiana, they're a feel-good story. They haven't been good in so long. I think they're going to come down to earth. I think Nebraska figures out a way in a close game. They have a good defense. They have the young quarterback who's getting better every week. I got Nebraska getting the win, moving the 6-1, becoming bowl eligible. Give me the Cornhuskers.
I don't agree to that. I think the quarterback for Indiana, Curtis Rourke.
He's been having a great season.
Protecting the ball very well. He's only thrown 2 interceptions from the season, 14 touchdowns.
Nebraska's defense has been better the past few weeks.
They have. But when he needs to, he can lean on Justice Ellison, the running back. 6 touchdowns, 409 yards on the ground. It's not the most, but it's, you know, it's like 6 yards a carry or, you know, 5 yards a carry, whatever it is. It's strong. It does what it needs to do. I think being that they're a well-mixed team, I'm going to disagree with you and say Indiana's going to win.
All right. Let's move on. Next one. This is a one of three SEC matchups we're going to cover.
This is the toughest pick for me, I think, for the whole week.
This is a big one. Number 7, Alabama, 5-1, 2-1 in the SEC. At number 11, Tennessee, 5-1, 2-1 in the SEC. Big rivalry game here. Alabama, 2.5-point favorites on the road, minus 135 on the money line. Bama had the huge win against Georgia. They almost blew.
Yep.
Next week,
huge
historic
upset
to Vanderbilt loss. Last week, almost another big upset to South Carolina, 27-25 at home.
The Gamecocks been playing their asses off.
But still, that was a loss. Bama did not look
good. They could not have that loss for their season.
But on the other hand, Tennessee, as we said, 5-1, 2-1. 2 games ago, big loss at Arkansas. Big upset loss at Arkansas.
And then last week, they barely beat the Gators.
Barely beat Florida in overtime. So like, both teams the past couple weeks have not looked good. Both teams trying to figure it out.
So let's assume that both teams come out at least on the same level. You know, they're both going to be, like, playing not disgruntled, but, like, out of whack. You know, they're not clicking, obviously, right now. Because when Milroe's clicking, Ryan Williams is clicking. When everybody on Alabama's clicking, they're putting up 50 points a game.
Yeah, that's the reason I'm going to go with Alabama. I trust Milroe. I know what he can do. I trust him more. Tennessee has a good young quarterback.
Yeah.
He's a freshman, first year starting.
But he needs time to grow.
He needs time to grow, and I think that's been evident the past couple weeks. Give me Alabama. In any game, I'm undecided when it's Alabama, especially versus like Tennessee, a team that historically, you know, hasn't played up to their billing.
Right.
I'm going to take the Crimson Tide, although this is not the same Crimson Tide we're used to because they do not have Nick Saban as
head
coach.
I was about to say, this is the first Nick Saban-less Crimson Tide we've seen in a while, but I think they're still proving they're a worthwhile Alabama team.
Well, I think they're proving they're still a good program. They're just not what they were.
Right. But they've shown moments where they still had that type of fire.
Well, yeah, they still have the talent, but it just goes to show you how good Nick Saban was. Like,
right. I agree. But I think Milroe's going to come out. I think they're going to start clicking like they did previously in the season. I think you can look out for the 17-year-old Ryan Williams.
Yeah,
and I got Alabama to win the game, cover the spread, hit the over.
I got Alabama by a touchdown.
All of the above. Let's go to the next game. Michigan at Illinois.
This
Michigan
is the one that's probably the hardest for me to pick.
I don't know why. For me, it was easy to go against Michigan on this one. I picked the Illinois Fighting Illini.
Fighting Illini.
I'm getting it right because I've seen their name multiple times this
Michigan
season.
Michigan favored it on the road.
But Michigan's been dull, to say the best, right?
Yes, but I mean, Illinois, Michigan has their game plan is they're going to run the ball at you. Illinois
right.
last week had a 24-point lead at Purdue.
Yeah, and they
Purdue's
almost blew
one of
it.
The worst teams in like a Power 5 conference.
Yeah, winning 50-44
went
overtime.
To overtime. Purdue actually in overtime went for the win. They went for two to try to win it. They
so
didn't get it.
What you just said is what I kind of keyed in on when I was looking at Illinois. Michigan's going to run the ball down your throat, right? They average, I think, 180-something, 190 yards a game on the ground. That's a good amount, not the most in college. You know, it's middle of the pack, upper tier maybe. Illinois is like 40 yards a game behind that. But
it's a big 40 yards
a game. I agree. But they're miles ahead in the air.
Yeah,
I say
Michigan
miles,
has a...
but... My Michigan has a well worse off quarterback situation.
I agree, but Michigan's game plan is to hold on to the ball, and they're not running the
right.
fast paced offense
gonna,
that
you're
Illinois
not going
to
get the clock time if you're Illinois. But once you start the drive with Illinois, I think because they're well rounded, they're going to be able to continue drives. They're not going to just be shut out by Michigan's defense. We've seen that happen with those, you know, two losses this season. I pick Illinois, the Fighting Illini, to beat Michigan. With the home field swing on their side.
I got the Wolverines. I think they go to Champaign, Illinois, and get the dub.
All right, I gotta stop being an asshole this week. I'm going to go – let's talk LSU versus the Razorbacks, Arkansas.
Number 7 LSU going to
they're
Arkansas.
They're 7? They updated it?
Yeah. Trap game. Arkansas 4-2, 2-1, as we said earlier. They beat Tennessee in their last game 2 weeks ago. LSU coming off – their biggest win of the year against Ole Miss at home. LSU,
it was a tough game.
It's a tough game, yeah. LSU's 2.5-point favorites at Arkansas. This has historically been a tough place for LSU to play. but they're slight favorites in the game. I think this is going to be a nail-biting, close game.
Yeah.
But I think the Tigers have a little more on offense than the Razorbacks do. I think their defense is starting to put it together. Whit Weeks is a fucking dog.
Yeah, he is.
So give me the Tigers over the Razorbacks.
Man, Arkansas has been in close competition with every team but week one, when they beat Arkansas Pine Bluff 70-0.
Yes.
Since then, it's, I don't want to say it's been downhill for them, but it's been like a like very contentious games almost for no reason. You know, playing down to their competition, but also playing up. They've had highlights, but they've also had bad starts. I think LSU, as much as I've, you know, shit on them, not shit on them, but thought they were going to lose a few times this season. They pulled it out every time. The offense has shown that the offense is that type again. You know, it's going to be that high-powered, even though they give up some scores.
Not quite as much.
But the defense has shown a lot better in recent weeks. You know, it held its own a lot better. Even though they've given up scores, they've given up way less yards. So I agree. I think LSU is going to win for the second-to-last game for our college football.
And then the last one is the game of the week. Number 5, Georgia. The Georgia Bulldogs going to number 1, Texas. I think we're going to find out a lot about Texas in this game. Georgia, 5-1, 3-1 in the SEC. Texas, 6-0, 2-0 in the SEC. Georgia coming off of a lackluster win against Mississippi State, one of the worst teams in the SEC. 41-31. It was a close game for no reason. I don't think it was ever in doubt, but Georgia just let him hang around a little bit.
Yeah, what's Carson Beck doing lately?
I've never been a big Carson Beck fan, if I'm honest.
I mean,
Texas, yeah, as we said earlier, they beat the shit out of OU in a game that's usually close between two rivals. Everything is saying Texas. Everybody's talking about Texas. The hype on Texas is up very high right now. That's the only thing giving me a little pause right now.
Why? Because there's some college kids?
Because there's some college kids, and I know Georgia's using that as motivation. Georgia has been a good team for the past, like, 5 years. Yeah. Texas has only recently, in the past couple years, been at this level.
With only one loss, Georgia's fallen far, though.
They have, but I think,
you know, like, they went like 29 games prior to this season without a loss or something crazy.
But I think that's,
and now with one loss, everybody's counting them out.
I think
that's what you're saying.
Motivation, right, for the Georgia Bulldogs. And because of that, I'm convincing myself I'm picking the Georgia Bulldogs. I think everybody's telling you to pick Texas. Everything's saying Texas. I think Georgia's going to feed.
We got to change.
I think Georgia's going to feed into that. I don't like Georgia, but I think they're going to come out. I think the Bulldogs get the win. They show Texas, okay, hey, this is the SEC. You're not just going to run through it like everybody thinks you are.
Well, to your credit, they've had 4 SEC games. Their lone loss is an SEC team. They're 3-1 in the SEC. Yes. So I get what you're saying. I disagree wholeheartedly because I think Texas is the real deal this season. They've shown a few things. It doesn't matter what quarterback they play. They got it.
They haven't played a top caliber team, though.
Right, but they're prepared. Regardless of what has happened, they've been prepared. They are prepared to win. They're prepared to not make the mistakes they need to not make. And I think they're going to continue to do that all the way to the college football championship this season.
Is that a prediction? A midseason?
Midseason prediction.
Yeah, give me the Bulldogs.
I got Texas winning. You got the Bulldogs. We don't agree. We don't disagree on much. But one of us got to win, especially in a college game. Let's go to the NFL.
Yeah, we got 5 NFL games now.
Texans at Packers. Green Bay is currently favored at home by 2.5, so they got the home field advantage. Over under 47.5, pretty much toss up on the money line. Texans got Joe Mixon back, playing well with Stephon Diggs.
Yeah,
Collins, I think, is still going to be out, but Tank Dell replaced him quite well.
And as a team that's 4-1 now, they probably played one of their best games last week.
4-1 with their only loss to the Vikings.
They had some close games where people were like, oh, you know, poo-pooing them. But
poo-pooing them.
They played pretty well against the Patriots last week.
Yeah, but 41-21 against Drake May.
On the flip side, the Packers, 4-2, dominated the Cardinals. I feel like nobody's talking about the Pack. I feel like both of these teams, nobody's really talking about.
So one of my fantasy leagues, I drafted Jordan Love to replace Aaron Rodgers, and I just was never excited about him, so I traded him off for a first, drafted Caleb Williams.
He's pretty good.
And he's a damn good quarterback, regardless of fantasy purposes. Knowing that I traded him makes me want to look out for him. He is a damn good quarterback. He missed maybe a game this season, or something, you know, earlier with a light injury, concussion, whatever it was. But him, Jaden Reed, Romeo Doubs got back in good graces after getting suspended. Forget Christian Watson in the scheme of things, because Doubs was like the intended guy to be number one over there, and he just had some personal conduct issues that
happens to the best of them.
Dez Bryant, hashtag.
Antonio Brown.
Hashtag.
But yeah, I got the Packers winning the game. I think they win at home.
I agree. Packers are going to win. I think the Texans are good, but the Packers have really everything, especially with Josh Jacobs. The whole offense is kind of clicking.
Let's move on. Next game, I think it's one of the most – it's a game between two of the most complete teams in the NFL. Division rivalry, NFC North, the 4-1 Lions, who are 2-0 on the road, taking on the 5-0 Vikings, 3-0 at home.
Surprise from Sam Darnold being
– Sam Darnold has been on fire.
I would say –
so is Jared Goff, though.
Firmly in the top, like, four MVP hunt.
MVP, definitely.
Yeah.
Lions, as we talked about earlier, fresh off of the ass-whooping to the Cowboys in Dallas.
But
Vikings had a week off after a London trip.
They beat the Jets. Now, that's a great thing. You come off of bye after a London game, which means you actually don't have jet lag. You get to rest.
Yeah, they had
you get to game
time,
plan for a great Lions team for like 10, 11 days and before you face them. That's awesome, especially with Aiden Hutchinson breaking his fibula and tibula.
I agree, but as a team that's early in the season and you're hot, do you want the early bye week? Do you want to keep your momentum going?
Well, I mean, you know how I feel about a college week three bye. I think it's the stupidest shit in the world. Just make one whole week of no college team playing instead of that, if that's the case. But I think the Vikings are staying hot. You got the best wide receiver in the NFL in Justin Jefferson. You got a strong team with the Vikings overall, you know, after not having to spend a whole bunch of money on a quarterback or, you know, draft and rely on that guy. You got a steal in Sam Darnold, and he's performing like he means it. He's doing the Geno Smith thing right now.
He is.
The Baker Mayfield thing. And I think the Vikings, especially at home, they're going to have all the fans in the stadium for them. I think they're going to go 6-0, 4-0 at home.
I think it's going to be a close game, but I disagree with you. I think the Lions pull it out. I think the Lions are a team that this is their second or third year of being like a legit team.
They are good. That's one thing you can't deny is like they've been consistently good for 2-3 years now, and it's something to say for sure.
So, because the Lions, this is what Jared Goff did. He did exactly what you're saying that Sam Darnold's doing. He went to a new team and kind of like rebirthed his career. It's like he's a legitimate.
Yeah, he was like a pretty boy in SoCal with the Rams at one point. Now he's not in the dirt with Detroit, but you know he's
gritty.
He's not overshadowed by the team. He fits in the scheme.
Yeah, but I got the Lions winning.
Cool difference there. Chiefs at 49ers is next.
Chiefs at 49ers.
This one blows my mind because when I placed my bet, the Chiefs had a positive plus odds money line, plus 105.
Me too. I had plus 100 at even.
So that is crazy to me. The 49ers are 3-3, regardless at home. They have a 1.5, 2-point spread, over under 47. It's not crazy. It's not, you know, the most or anything. But 49ers don't have Christian McCaffrey. They have Jordan Mason, who's been replacing him well. But Brock Purdy has still been playing that, like, good game, but just not doing enough to get the win. He's doing 3-3 type games.
I was going to come in fully prepared to pick the 49ers. But this is actually going to be my guest pick of the week.
Wow.
Beautiful fiance, Clara. I gave her the list of picks. Surprise.
And she's like, low-hanging fruit, please?
The Chiefs are her favorite NFL team.
Really?
Their favorite NFL team recently.
Shout out Clara. It's Taylor Swift.
So she's picking the Chiefs.
Damn it. I just caught on.
Chiefs to...
I counter that with Butker.
Stay undefeated, 6-0. So I'm going with my beautiful fiance, Clara. Chiefs, I think they go. They continue their undefeated start to the season. They got the refs on their side, too, so that's always a plus. Give me the Chiefs to go in the San Fran. Super Bowl rematch, get the win.
Yeah, I don't see why they don't. I said this a few weeks ago when the Chiefs were like minus 300. That's like low odds for them. They should be winning. They should be like minus 700 until they win a game. Give me the Chiefs. Give me the money line all day.
Yeah, plus money line on the Chiefs.
Sneak
crazy.
Peek, I put a bet on that one because why would you not? Let's go to the last game. Second to last game.
Sunday night football.
Jets at Steelers.
Jets desperately needing a win after three straight losses.
So let's take a look at the Jets. They're minus Robert Saleh, but they're plus Devontae Adams as of today. So
and now they're favorites at Pittsburgh Steelers. who are 4-2.
Yeah, because the Pittsburgh Steelers, regardless of how, you know, decent they've been doing it 4-2, they still have the mistake-driven Justin Fields.
Yeah, but Tomlin hinted at possibly Russell Wilson being the starter this week.
That doesn't help.
We'll see.
You saw him
helps.
In Denver last week, right?
I did.
Not last week, last year. My bad.
I so desperately want the Jets to win. I think this is almost
This is a need to win type game for Aaron Rodgers. I think like he needs to prove something. He's had two growing performances in a row. You know, the week before last, I think he threw for almost 300 yards, a couple touchdowns, one interception.
Three picks. In London, he threw three picks.
There you go. But
they fired Robert Saleh.
But then
he didn't play last week.
A lot better. You know, they just lost a close
game.
And
now he is Devontae Adams, his best friend and one of the best receivers
in the NFL. His whole roster is his best friend. Like, all people he loves.
He has no excuse now. The Jets are kind of like, we're going all in on you, so come on.
Yeah, you're the head coach, Aaron Rodgers. You got to win this damn game. I love
Aaron Rodgers, so I'm picking the Jets. I think he steps up to the plate.
I agree.
I got the Jets winning.
I agree. Ravens at Buccaneers is the Monday night football game.
Ravens, rare to see in the NFL. Both teams are 4-2, so just think about this. Both teams 4-2, but Ravens on the road.
How did the Ravens start?
They started 0-2, right?
Right.
But exactly. They've been one of the hottest teams, probably the hottest team in the NFL.
They Ravens won a five-touchdown shootout to Joe Burrow.
Ravens on the road are 3.5-point favorites and -190 on the odds.
Mm-hmm.
Bucks coming off of a huge win against the Saints, but as we said, the Saints injury-ridden.
I would say the Bucks are on the short list for a Super Bowl appearance at this point.
The Ravens
are on the short list for a Super Bowl appearance at this point. The problem is you have Lamar Jackson, who's a dual threat. He's become accurate all of a sudden.
Well, because he has...
And he can throw, he can run still.
Derrick Henry has 700 yards through six games right now.
But this is the thing. If he decides he doesn't want to throw, he can just run himself. So you have a guy who's that crazy dual threat with one of the best running backs to ever exist, who's a monster size of a human in Derrick Henry. It's hard to beat that.
I saw something that this year, because they track how fast players go, Derrick Henry has like the second fastest clock speed in all the NFL for any player at any point.
And he's like 6'10".
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. He might not be 6'10".
I think the Ravens...
He's so tall, though.
I think the Ravens, they're my Super Bowl pick right now.
They're playing so much better. For them to have a similar record to the Chiefs, you know, having a couple losses, but having...
And they lost that close game to... I think they're just figuring it out.
Yeah.
Give me the Ravens all day in Tampa.
I agree.
Tampa's not a hard place to play. It's like a nice area.
Yeah.
Nice stadium. There's going to be a lot of Ravens fans.
Wait, is it still a nice stadium?
Yes, it is. Give me the Ravens.
All right, just checking.
The dub.
I agree. Ravens going to win. All right, let's go to our total standings for the season to wrap up the episode, and then we'll jump into our bets for the week just to give you everything. You want to run through your total picks after that?
Yes.
All right,
yes,
cool.
Yes, yes.
So I'm 68 and 38 in total picks. Christian, you're 66 and 40, so I have a slight edge on you there. I'm going to edge you. We both went 11 and 4 last week, so that's good performances there. I'm 22 and 18 in overall bets. You're 19 and 21 in overall bets. You went up 1.2 units to be exact last week. I went down 0.7, both in the 3-2 situation.
Yeah, the plus odds on LSU helped me a lot.
They did. That's the sole reason you went up, because we matched two of the other bets we had that both won. But yeah, this week I have Brady High Stand money line -158, 2 units. Charles Energy Johnson money line -235, 2 units. LSU money line -137. Green Bay money line -156. And Kansas City money line +105. All 2 units on my bets this week. Christian, my boy, what you got?
All 2 units for me, too. Alex actually made a change on my bets, too. So just listen closely. I got Michelle Pereira money line at +115. I got High Stand money line at -150. I got LSU -2.5 points at -110.
Mm-hmm.
I got the Georgia Bulldogs money line +150. And then I have the Jets money line -125.
To take
all 2 units as well.
Nice. I like them. All right. What about your total picks for the week? Let's run through your 5 UFC if you got them, and then we'll run through the 10 football and leave.
I'll just give you everything right now, Alex.
Yes, sir. Give me everything you got.
Michelle Pereira, Kyler Phillips, Charles Johnson, Brady Highstand, Darren Elkins, Nebraska Cornhuskers, Alabama Crimson Tide, Michigan Wolverines, LSU Tigers, Georgia Bulldogs, Green Bay Packers, Detroit Lions, Kansas City Chiefs, from my beautiful fiance Clara, New York Jets, and the Baltimore Ravens.
Nice. So just a heads up, Christian is overall like 62.4% for over a year's worth of picks. So if you want to follow those, expect him to miss like 3 to 4 picks. Just saying. My picks, Daniel Pineda, Brady Highstand, Charles Johnson, Kyler Phillips, Michelle Pereira, Indiana, Alabama, Illinois, LSU, and Texas. Those are college football. And then for NFL, I'm going to go with the Packers, the Vikings, the Chiefs, the Jets, and the Ravens. I'm like 64.1%, so I'll probably miss the same amount, maybe one less than you. It's, you know, it's, we're close. But yeah, that's everything we got for you this week. Check us out next week. What are we looking at?
We got episode 65, so that's going to be, we're going to cover football as usual. Woo-hoo. We got a numbered UFC card next week, UFC 308 Topuria versus Holloway.
Man, I need Holloway to win that fight. Shut that fucking Spanish dude up.
Me too. And then we're going to recap the football on UFC we picked this week. So check it out, episode 65.
All right. Like and subscribe. Thanks.